Morning. Today's daf in Zvachim is Kuf Yud Zayin 117. We are making our way through the last parak of Zvachim. This is the parak dedicated to the topic of the continuation of Shchutei Chutz from the previous parak, and also the history of Karbanos. What point historically were Karbanos brought, and under what circumstances were they allowed to be brought? All the Mishnayos of this parak already were taught to us back on Kuf Yud Beis. The Mishnah over there went through all the details regarding the various stages of the Karbanos. If you take a look back on the Mishnah, Kuf Yud Beis and Beis. So we already covered a good part of the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah we already covered regarding Shchutei Chutz. But the second part of the Mishnah, Achalohu Kama Mishkan, you can find me on Kuf Yud Beis. This is just a review, but this is just a setup for today. Achalohu Kama Mishkan, the Mishnah goes on to say that before the Mishkan was set up, so basically anything pre-Mishkan, which, as we already pointed out, we left Mitzrayim in the year 2448, and the second year, 2449, the Mishkan was set up. So basically, we're talking, roughly around the first 2,500 years of human history. So Achalohu Kama Mishkan Hayu Abamus Mutaris. So Abamus would be allowed. Ve'avoda be'bechoros. Now the avoda was done by the firstborn. So Mishahu Kama Mishkan. But now once the Mishkan was set up in the desert, Nesru Abamus. So now the Abamus would become prohibited. Ve'avodas be'kohanim. And the avoda is transferred over to the kohanim. Kach Kedashim Necham Lifnim and Aklayim. As far as the Kach Kedashim are concerned, they can only be eaten within the curtains, meaning the curtains of the Mishkan, the Kachim Kalam b'chol Machane Yisrael. Now, as far as the Kachim Kachim are concerned, so they can be eaten b'chol Machane Yisrael, basically anywhere within the camp where the Jewish people camped. Okay, we'll pause over there in the Mishnah, and now take a look at our daf. We are on Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Beis 116b, and we are starting this morning with Kachim Kalam Nechalam b'chol Machane Yisrael. So the Gemara starts off with a statement by Rav Huna, which at first, the first time we hear it, and the first time it's presented to us, seems to be difficult to understand. Amar Rav Huna b'chol mekamos Yisrael. So Rav Huna says b'chol mekamos Yisrael. Now read the statement carefully. It says mekamos. At this point, what do we think Rav Huna means? If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi is the towards the bottom of the Amud. It's the wide line, the first wide line on the bottom of the Amud. B'chol mekamos Yisrael. Kalsa kadacha. Rashi writes that at this point, what we think is hasha dafil yatsa echad mehem chutzam achan Yisrael ochel kashim kalam sham. That if you are in the midbar and you're eating your kachim kalam ish la'ar shlamim, and you could be anywhere within Machane Yisrael, and at this point we think Rav Huna means you can even go outside of Machane Yisrael, meaning that there was a certain encampment that we had in the desert, as we already pointed out a number of times. The central, the center of the encampment was the Mishkan. The one ring of perimeter around the Mishkan, that's Machane Levi, Machane Leviya. That's where Levim were situated. And then another perimeter around that, that's where the Yud Beis Shvatim, that's the 12 tribes. We had an encampment where three were to the north, three were to the east, three were to the south, three were to the west. And that was what we refer to as Machane Yisrael. At this point, what Rav Huna seems to be telling us is that even if you're eating your Kachim Kalim, you could be eating it even outside of Machane Yisrael, which basically means that there is no there's no perimeter. You can eat the Machane, you can eat Kachim Kalim anywhere. To which the Gemara, that's what the Gemara is reacting to, and we're back into the Gemara. Ava Machane Lohave, Eitzve Rav Nachman Rav Huna, Machanos Bemidbar Lohave. You mean to tell me that there was no Machanos in the desert? Meaning, how could you suggest that there is no third perimeter? Of course there's a third perimeter. The Hatanya, Kishim Shemachane Bemidbar, Kach Machane Beyushalayim. So just like there was a Machane in the desert, so too is a Machane in Yerushalayim. Basically, what the Braisa here is going to tell us, this is a point that we've made already time and again, that the three corresponding Machanos that we had in the desert are the three corresponding Machanos that we have in Yerushalayim. So we start with the Machane Yisrael, which corresponds to Machane Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim lahar habayis, Machane Yisrael. So from Yerushalayim until Har Habayis, that's considered Machane Yisrael. Basically, what the Braisa is going to do is it's going to take us from the outside in. So we're starting on the outside, which is Yerushalayim. We're going now interior. So that takes us from the walls of Yerushalayim until Har Habayis. That's Machane Yisrael. Mehar Habayis l'shar Nikanor Machane Leviya. From the Har Habayis until the gate of Nikanor, that's the entrance into the Azara. So that's Machane Levi. Mikan ve'elech Machane Shechina. Now, as you go now interior, as you walk through the doors of Shar Nikanor, so that now is Machane Shechina. Ve'hein hein kolayim shemei midbar, and that corresponds to the curtains that were in the desert that surrounded the Mishkan. What do we have over here? Clearly, what we have over here established is perimeters. In fact, three perimeters. Machane Shechina, I'm going now outside. Machane Shechina, Machane Levi, Machane Yisrael. So the statement of Rav Huna that if you're eating kashim kalim in the desert, you could be eating it outside of Machane Yisrael, that simply is untenable. We know that there are three machanas. We know that kashim kalim can only be eaten up to, but not beyond, the third machana. So Ella Amos, so the Gemara says, Bechol makom machane Yisrael. Okay, so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to redact the statement of Rav Huna. What Rav Huna originally presented is Bechol makom was Yisrael, and now the way we're going to understand it is Bechol makom machane Yisrael. To which the Gemara's reaction is, okay, great. Now we have a statement by Rav Huna. We have a statement by Rav Huna which doesn't seem to include any chiddush whatsoever. It's what we already knew, that as far as being in the desert is concerned, the third perimeter is Machane Yisrael, and you can't eat kachim kalim beyond that point in time. Before Rav Huna came along, we knew that already. So Pshita, the Gemara says, so what he's saying now is obvious. I don't understand what his chiddush is. So Ma'o detema ifsul biyotzei kamash malan. So the Gemara says, here's what I might have thought. I might have thought that during the desert we traveled a number of times. But when we traveled, so what we did is we broke down the Mishkan. The Levim carried the Mishkan. And even Machane Yisrael now broke down. So basically the entire formation of Machane Shechina, Machane Levi, Machane Yisrael all broke down. So I might have thought now that if I'm holding any kashim kalim in my hands while we're traveling, so there's no longer a formation, there's no longer a perimeter system. And so therefore, that which I'm holding is puzzle. What Rav Huna is coming to teach me is that no. What I'll do is I'll hold the kashim kalim in my hands. We'll travel. Now, I admit, by the way, that if we're traveling for a long time, so then that means to say then that the it's going to be disqualified through because of nosar. But leave that point aside for just a moment. So in other words, the next time we set up camp, so the kashim kalim that I have now, I can resume eating. Now, if you read Rashi carefully, I'm going to read Rashi inside. Rashi sounds like that while we're traveling, we're not allowed to eat the kashim kalim. Rashi, Ema b'chol makomos machane Yisrael, she'afilu. Rashi is the third line down, the third wide line. She'afilu b'shasiluk masaos ein nifsalim ella molichin imo. So while we are deconstructing the camp and while getting ready to travel, so what I'll do is I'll take the kashim kalim and I'll take them with me. Uvemakum chani yasam. Then when we park, ochlim b'machane. So once again, I'm allowed to resume eating the kashim kalim. A careful reading of Rashi would seem to indicate that while we're traveling, we're not going to be eating the kashim kalim. That's what Rashi seems to be saying. And not only is that what Rashi seems to be saying, but if you look at the Tosus on the bottom of the Samud, that goes to the top of Kuf Yud Zayin, so Tosus makes the same diak. He reads Rashi the same way we just did. Tosus is very bothered by that. Tosus says that he's of the opinion that we can eat the kashim kalim even while in transit. See Tosus inside for more on that topic. Ve'ema, we're back to the Gemara, four lines from the bottom. Ve'ema hachinami, the Gemara says, I don't understand it. Actually, what we're saying now actually sounds very reasonable. That if we break down the Mishkan and we're traveling, so there's no longer a Machane Shechina, Leviyah, and Yisrael, and therefore kashim kalim should be disqualified. Amakra v'nasa olam moed. So the Gemara says no, that even when the olam moed is in transit, it still has a status of olam moed. Afa pisha nasa olam moed. Who? Even though the olam moed is in transit, it's still considered olam moed. As a result of that, so the kashim kalim are still within a certain allowance in terms of still having the status of being in Machane Yisrael. Truth of the matter is that when you read the Gemara, it certainly sounds more like Tosos, that you're allowed to eat the kashim kalim even while the Mishkan's in transit. But anyway, Tanya, we are continuing in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Od Acheres Haisa. So even though we keep talking about there being three perimeters, Machane Shechina, Machane Leviyah, Machane Yisrael, the Rashbi says that there really is a fourth. And that is, now there's a girsa question over here of whether the word chel belongs or does not belong, but in either event, chel and ezras nashim he. So we're going to talk about the chel. We're going to talk about the ezras nashim. The chel is a small little perimeter fence that surrounds the azara. Meaning, if you will, the azara, as we've spoken time and again, is the area that surrounds a courtyard. It actually creates a courtyard. It's the wall that creates a courtyard. We keep referring in the Mishnah as kalim as curtains. That's because in the desert, it was actually curtains. But in the Beis HaMikdash, it was actually a wall surrounding the Azara, and that creates your first perimeter of the Azara. Anything outside of that wall, we keep referring to as Harabais, which is Machane Leviyah. What the Rashbi is teaching us is that we can also add like a fourth perimeter, and that is meaning a fourth section, but it's actually between one and two. Meaning it's the Chel, which is that small little fence that goes around the Azara, and also Ezras Nashim. Ezras Nashim, if you look at the at the map of the Beis HaMikdash, so you will see that in front of Sharni Karnar, meaning to the east of Sharni Karnar, you have another section which is called, which is an Azar, which is a courtyard, and we refer to it as Ezros Nashim. Now, Min HaTorah, Ezros Nashim is Har Bayis. In other words, it's just simply an extension of Har Bayis, and it does not have its own independent status. What the Rashbi is telling us in the Gemara is that at least on a Derabbanan level, rabbinically, Ezros Nashim is somewhere in between the status of Machane Levia and Machane Shechina. What does that mean? So he goes on to explain. And you will not be punished if you're in that area. What does that mean, you're not going to be punished? If you look at Rashi, second to last line, Machane Revi is Chaluka Mehar Bayis and Me'ezer, V'lo Hayu Onshin Allah Al HaNichnas LaBetumah B'Maseches Kelim Mefarish Mahi Chalkaho Mehar Bayis. So Rashi just simply footnotes where to go to find out more information about the Ezros Nashim. So he says, go to your Mishnayos in Kelim, specifically the first parak of Kelim, where the Mishnah over there notes on what point is it going to be on a higher level than just simply being Har Abayis. But you can't go into the Har Abayis area while you're in a state of being Tamei Meis. We know as a Tamei Meis you're allowed to go into the Har Abayis area in general, but because this Ezros Nashim has an elevated status, it's like Har Abayis plus, if you will, so therefore a Tamei Meis is not allowed to go into the into the Ezros Nashim area. Uvishilo. We're continuing in the Gemara. This is all a continuation of the Rashbi statement. Uvishilo, second to last line on the Amud. Lohayu elashne machanos bavad. There were only two machanos in Shilo. So, the simple reading of the Rashbi is basically telling us like this. There are, as a base model, there are three machanos. There are three perimeters. Shechina, Leviah, and Yisrael. In the Beis HaMikdash, so Ezros Nashim and the Chel is like kind of like a, like an additional level, right? One level higher than Har Abayis, but lower than Machane Shechina. All right, one level higher. I'm saying the same thing. I'm just, you know, being consistent in the language. It's one level higher than the Har Abayis, one level lower than the Azara. Fine. That's in terms of the Beis HaMikdash. And then he says, now let's go to Shilo. Now, in Shilo, we know that the Mishkan was set up in Shilo, and it was there for 369 years. And what the Rashbi is saying is that in Shilo, there were only two machanos in Shilo, meaning that there was one of the three wasn't there in Shilo. Now, before we even see the Gemara inside, let's think this out. Like, which of the three could possibly be missing? So, it can't be Machane Shechina, meaning that's where the karbanos are offered. That's where the aron is. In other words, that's the entire building. So of the three, Machane Shechina cannot be the one that he's leaving out. So basically, we are down to two suspects in terms of which one he's leaving out. He's either leaving out Machane Leviah or he's leaving out Machane Yisrael. And so basically, now what the Gemara is going to try to figure out is, Of these two, which one is the Rashbi saying that in Shilo simply did not have? Hai minayu lohaya. That's the Gemara's next question. Which one did Shilo not have? So Amar Rabba mistabed the Machane Leviah havei. So Rabba says, look, if I'm left to try to figure it out, so I would say that Shilo did not have Machane Leviah. That's the middle. The Isak adacha Machane Leviah lo havei, because if you want to tell me, I'm sorry, the Machane Leviah havei. Sorry. Let's do that again. Let me do that better. In other words, Machane Leviah they did have, which means that Machane Yisrael they did not have. Right? Again, as I pointed out, Machane Shechina is not on the table. It's not open for negotiation. Obviously, there was Machane Shechina. So the only thing left were Machane Leviah and Machane Yisrael. And what Rabba now is entertaining is that Machane Leviah was there. It was Machane Yisrael that was not there. How do I know that? Because the E Sakadacha Machane Leviah lo havei. Because if you want to entertain the idea that there was no Machane Leviah, we now turn to the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Nimzu Zavin Utamei Meis Mishtalchin Chutz Machane. Now what comes out is that a Zavin Utamei Meis are going to be sent out of Machane Achas. They're going to be sent out of one Machane. Meaning, in the absence of Machane Levi, so that means now that these two groups are going to be sent out to only Machane Yisrael. You'll ask, and is that so bad? V'hatorah amra, that's the next line of the Gemara. V'hatorah amra v'lo yitamus machanehem. The Torah says that you cannot be metame their machanos, meaning te machna lezeh, machna lezeh, meaning that these groups of people that are tame are to be segregated. And because of this requirement of segregation, if in fact we only had machna Yisrael and we didn't have machna Levi, so that means that these groups now would not be segregated, and the Torah, for whatever its reasons, want us to segregate the various groups of people that are tame, meaning the Torah does not want the tame mace and the zavim to be in one location. I don't know why, but that doesn't matter. In other words, but the Torah wants them separated. So therefore, we have to entertain the idea that there was a machna Levi, so that those who are tame mace can go into machna Levi, and those who are zavim are going to go outside of machna Levi. So Amalei Rava Elamai machna Yisrael lo havi. So Rava says, so let's continue with this train of thought. So you're saying that in Shiloh there was only machna Shechina, there was machna Levi, and there was no machna Yisrael. So nimtzu zavim mitzorim mishtachlan lamakom echad. So the Gemara says, now here's what comes out now according to you. Let's say you're a mitzorah. We know that a mitzorah is sent out of all three camps, right? The Torah says badad yeshev. He has to be outside by himself. He's got to have a lot of alone time. Not a lot, but in other words, a good amount of alone time. So now you're telling me that without Machane Yisrael, so what's going to happen now? So the Mitzorah is being sent out. So how far is out? Well, without Machane Yisrael, so that means he's only sent out of Machane Levi. That means now that our Mitzorah is going to be in the same place where you're going to find your Zav, Amra Badad Yeshev, and the Torah says that he has to be by himself. Shelo yeshiv tamei acher imo. There can't be any other tamei person sitting with the mitzorah. So, no matter how you slice it, it comes out now that if we're going to be missing one of the three machanos, either in machana Levi or machana Yisrael, doesn't really matter, we're going to have a problem because the Torah is clear in this idea that various tamei people have to be segregated one from another. Again, I don't know why, but that's not the point in the Gemara. The various tamei people have to be segregated, and if we're missing either machna Levi or machna Yisrael, so we're going to have an intermingling of the various different types of tamei people, and the Torah doesn't want that. So really, when all said and done, we're kind of stuck. Meaning, the statement of the Rashbi is that in Shiloh there are only two machanos, but when all said and done, there has to be three. Otherwise, we're not going to have the proper segregation of the various tamei people. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to endorse the idea that there were all three machanos by Shiloh. Machne Shechina, Machne Leviyah, Machne Yisrael. We're going to take that position. Now, but we can't change what the Rashbi said. The Rashbi said that there were only two machanos, so that's only vis-a-vis the halacha of klita. That's only in terms of absorption. When we talk about klita over here, what are we talking about? We're talking about a ritzach b'shogeg, meaning we're going now back to the second parak of Makos. The Torah says that if somebody kills inadvertently, so he's sent to the Ir Miklat. So now here's what we're learning together. That generally speaking, an Ir Miklat is an Ir Levi, in other words, the city of the Levium. And what the Rashbi is telling us is that there is no city of the Levium by Shiloh, meaning Shiloh does not have a Machna Leviyah. Vis-a-vis Tuman Tahara, yes, it has a Levi perimeter. But vis-a-vis being an Ir Miklat, it simply does not function as an Ir Miklat. So Michlal de Bemidbar have kalta Machna Leviyah. So the Gemara says, so let's go backwards now in time, historically. So now if we're in the desert, so what you're saying now is that if you're in the desert, so again, in the desert, we had three perimeters, Shechina, Leviyah, and Yisrael. So you're telling me that if somebody killed in the desert, Bishogeg, so he's going to now go to the middle perimeter of Machan Leviyah, and to which the Gemara's response is really simple, in. That's absolutely correct. V'atanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa that supports this. V'samti lecha makom b'chayecha. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives instructions to Moshe to set up the Ari Miklat, so he says, V'samti lecha, you're going to place, which means that Moshe himself, even though he was not allowed entrance into Eretz Yisrael, but he's going to start setting up the Ari Miklat. Makom b'chayecha. Makom mikomcha asher yanushama malamishemegal b'midbar. Even in the desert, So if somebody killed it inadvertently, he's going to be sent into exile, into the Ir Miklat. And here the Brisa says it really clearly, that where he's being sent to is Machne Leviyah. Mikanamru ben Levi Shaharag. Now, from this point going forward, so what do we know? We know that in the desert there was a construct of a Ir Miklat. The Ir Miklat was where the Levim were situated, which what we refer to as Machne Leviyah. Now, how many in the desert? This is a setup question. This is an easy question. In the desert, so how many cities of refuge were there? The answer is one, meaning the one section of Machne Leviyah. So, if you were operating in history where there was a time where there was only one city of refuge, meaning Machne Leviyah, and you were a Ben Levi, and you killed Bishogeg, so where do you go? Meaning there's no other Ir Miklat to go to. And that brings us to the next point of the Gemara. Amru, Ben Levi Shaharag, Gola Miplach Laplach, V'imgala Lepalcho, Palcho Kolet. If you're a Ben Levi, and inadvertently you killed somebody, so where should you go? So the best thing to do is to move from one plach to another plach. The way Rashi describes it is to move from one part of your Ir Miklat to another part of the Ir Miklat. Right? The plach, it's hard to translate the word plach. It's kind of like a county, I guess you could say. A neighborhood, right. But in other words, you go from one part to another plach. V'im galal pachol pachol kolta. And even if you stay in the same plach, meaning it's still going to work. And why is it going to work? Because we just learned together that in the midbar there was only one Ir Miklat. So obviously the Torah entertains the idea that there's one Ir Miklat, and if you're Ben Levi, you're certainly going to have a city of refuge. So that means to say that even if you stay within the Ir Miklat that you already live in, that's going to afford you the protection. So this all brings us back to the point that in general, anything that has the status of Machne Leviyah is going to be serving as an Ir Miklat that will serve as refuge. And then that all brings us back to the Rashbi. What the Rashbi is teaching us is that in Shiloh, even though there technically was a Machne Leviyah, meaning vis-a-vis Tumah Tahara, and who gets ejected from which section. So there is three perimeters. There's a Shechina, there's a Leviyah, and there's Yisrael. But vis-a-vis Ir Miklat, Shiloh just simply did not operate as an Ir Miklat. Maikra, Amar Avacha Bered Ravika, Ki Be'ir Miklato Yashav Ir Shekaltaso Kvar. In other words, it has to be an Ir Miklat in a city that already provided refuge. Yes. Yeah. That's right. Right. But that's absolutely correct. Right. That's the correct conclusion. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first section of today's daf. So it was the basic discussion that we had up until now was in the desert when there were three perimeters. So when you're eating your kachim kolam, you have to be eating it within. You can eat it within all three perimeters. You can be eat it in Machne, Shechina, and Leviyah and Yisrael. And then a discussion of what happens when they had to break down the Mishkan and travel. So what we learned together is that even when they broke down the Mishkan and traveled, they took the Kachim Kalim with them, according to Rashi. Only when they reset up the camp, they're going to resume eating it, and according to Tosos, they can even continue eating it while traveling. But in any event, that was the first discussion of today's daf. We now move along. Baal Gilgal. And so now, if you go back to the Mishnah, Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, and let's resume reviewing the Mishnah as we get ready for the next part of the Gemara. The Mishnah says that in the Mishkan, Avoda was transferred over to the Kohanim. Kachim were eaten within the curtains. Kachim Kalim could be eaten anywhere within Machne Yisrael. Next part of the Mishnah, it's right in the middle of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis. Ba'u LeGilgal. So now they go to Gilgal. Remember, upon entrance into Eretz Yisrael, 40 years after we left Egypt. So we for the next 14 years would be both conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. So for those 14 years, that is referred to as Gilgal, because there was a temporary central Mishkan that was set up in Gilgal, but it was temporary, and very often the Aron was not there. So that means to say that during these 14 years, there was a heter bamos. The Mishnah actually spells this out. Ba'u l'gilgal hutru abamos. So people were allowed to offer karbanos in their own houses. Right, I keep saying backyards, by the way. We're going to see in the Gemara today. It sounds like it's actually preferable to be done on the rooftops. But in any event, there was a heter bamos. Kashya kadashim necham lifnim in eklayim. So as far as kashya kadashim are concerned, they were only offered in Gilgal. So they were eaten within the curtains. V'kashim kalam b'chol makom. And kashim kalam could be eaten anywhere. And so now what we're going to be doing for the rest of today's daf is we're going to be discussing this 14-year period of Gilgal. What is allowed to be offered in our backyards? So Tana Rabbanan, we are starting the Gemara Ba'ala Gilgal. We are on Kuf Yuzayin Amid Aleph. We're halfway down in the Amud. We are at the two dots. And Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara here, quotes a Braisa. Now this Braisa is a little bit long. The Braisa over here is also going to have a number of opinions in terms of what exactly would be allowed in Gilgal during these 14 years to be offered on Abamos. In other words, obviously this represents a really interesting period in Jewish history where karbanos no longer were centralized and that karbanos could be offered anywhere. In fact, we're going to be quoting our parsha, meaning this week's Sedra's Parshas Re'eh, and a number of times in the course of today's daf and tomorrow's daf, we're going to be quoting from this week's Sedra in terms of being the source of these halachas, that there was these short historical periods of time. Start off called Nidav V'Nidav Hayakrav Bebama. Anything which was voluntary. Neder, Nedava, we know the difference between Nedarim and Nedavos is that Neder is a personal obligation, meaning you create a liability upon yourself, where in the event if something happened to the carbon, you're still responsible to bring it. Nedava just simply means that I'm only bringing this animal and only this animal. Something where it happened to the animal, so I'm not personally responsible. But anyway, they're both voluntary carbonos. Called Nedar V'Nedav Hayikra Bebama. They could be offered on the private bamas. She'ein nidav v'nidav ein krav bebama. But something which is not private cannot be offered on something which is not voluntary cannot be offered on the bama. And mincha u'nazirus kravim bebama. Mincha and nazirus, the carbon nazir, are in fact allowed to be offered on the backyard bamas. Divrei Rebbe Meir. So far, all this that we just learned in Braisa all represents the opinion of Rebbe Meir. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi, Rashi, kol nida v'nida kra bebama ketana, di ilu bebama gedola akarcha karvichol v'tzibor. Meaning, even as we discuss this Gilgal, we have to make a clear distinction between a bama ketana and a bama gedola. Bama gedola is literally the big bama, but in other words, that's the one that was centrally located during these 14 years. Central location was Gilgal. Now, Rashi points out, in Gilgal itself, you bring Chovat Sibur, you bring the public karbanos, the obligatory public karbanos, Dechsev, Ayasu, Esapesach, B'Gilgal. And we're going to keep referencing this point this morning, and that is that we know they offered Karban Pesach in Gilgal, meaning the Navi tells us in Sefer Yoshua, it tells us that they offered Karban Pesach in Gilgal. Karban Pesach is an obligatory carbon, and it's also carbon sibur, right? This is an idea that we've already expressed a number of times earlier, and we get to say it over again today, and that is carbon Pesach, even though every individual is responsible to bring it, but because everybody's bringing it to the one central location, it has the status of a carbon sibur. So we know that in Gilgal, a chovat sibur is offered, that a public obligation is in fact brought. Elabiktanam. Ka'amar dekarvu nadarm nadavos. So when we say the word bama over here, we mean, says Rashi, we're talking about the bama katana, meaning the private bamas in our backyards. V'lo chovas v'toras kohanim tanila behedja l'Reb Meir. Now this point Rashi says that I just taught you is clearly articulated in Toras Kohanim. So good. Okay. So the first opinion in the Brice is that of Reb Meir. Voluntary karbanos are offered in your backyard. Obligatory offerings are offered in the central location of Gilgal, and according to Reb Meir, Mincha and Karban Nazir are allowed to be offered on your private bamas. Now, the Chachamim Omrim lo kirvu yachid ela olos v'shlamim bavad. The Chachamim say that an individual can only bring ola and shlamim on their backyard. That's it, nothing else. We will, later this morning, we're going to articulate the differences between the Chachamim and Rebbe Meir. Third opinion in the Brice of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda Omer Kol Shat Sibur VeYachid Makrivim BaOl Moed SheBeMidbar Makrivim BaOl Moed SheBeGilgal. Anything that either the community or the individual are going to be offering in Ol Moed in the desert, they're going to be offering in Gilgal. Ma bein Ohel Moed shebemidbar lebein Ohel Moed shebeGilgal. So what difference is there between the Ohel Moed that was set up in the desert and the Ohel Moed of Gilgal? Ohel Moed shebemidbar lo hayu bamos mutaros. Ohel Moed shebeGilgal hayu bamos mutaros. So the difference is that in the Mishkan, in the desert, so there was no heter bamos. In Gilgal, there was a heter bamos. And the bama that was on the rooftops, here's where the Gemara says it clearly. The best place for the bama should be the rooftop. Now the bamas that were on your rooftops, the only thing that was offered there was only an ola and a shlamim. Now, obviously, what we need to understand is that Rav Yehuda seems to be saying the same thing the Chachamim are saying. And again, stay tuned. Later on, the Gemara is going to point out the differences between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim that we just learned together. V'Chachamim Omrim. Now, there's a fourth opinion, and here come the Chachamim again. Now, opinion number one in the Braisa was Rav Meir. Opinion number two was the Chachamim. Opinion number three is Rav Yehuda. So, in the Braisa, we are treated now to a second Chachamim. And again, later we're going to explore differences between the second Chachamim and the first Chachamim. The Chachamim Amrim, Kol Shatzibar Makrivim Ba'ol Moed Shebemidbar, Makrivim Ba'ol Moed Shebegilgal. Anything that was offered by the public in Ohel Moed was offered in Gilgal. V'kan v'kan lo karvu yachid ela ola v'shlamim b'levad. In both cases, an individual only brought ola v'shlamim by themselves. Okay, so later on, the Gemara is going to explore where the differences are between the Tanakhama and the Chachamim. And finally, the fifth opinion of the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Tzibur lo hikrivu ela pischeihem v'chovas shekavu lehem zman. According to Rabbi Shimon, he says that the only thing that was offered in Gilgal was only Karban Pesach and obligations that were time-bound. Rashi over here writes, Rashi you can find, second to last line on the Amud, Rabbi Shimon Palagakulu. Rabbi Shimon's arguing with all the aforementioned opinions, says Rashi. Svir lehu de'ein akulu. De kulu svir lehu de'ein chiluk l'sibur bein midbar l'gilgal b'bama gedola. Whereas according to everybody was of the opinion that vis-a-vis central location, meaning that in the desert, that in Gilgal, so Bama Gedola, it's all the same. Meaning whatever could be offered in the central location of the Mishkan could be offered in the Bama Gedola in Gilgal. On that, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Aft Sibur Atzmam, Lohi, Krivu B'Gedola, Yoser, Miyachi B'Katana. Even as it relates to the community themselves, they only offered on the Gedola only that which the individual offered on the Katana. The only notable exception is going to be the Karban Pesach and any other obligations which were demanded by time. Meaning, Rashi over here writes, El Pischeim, Avalo Par Helam Davir, Visir Avodis Kochavim, Lo Karvar Lahem B'Gilgal. Meaning, in Gilgal, even if it was an obligatory Karban, and even if it was a communal Karban in nature, if the calendar didn't demand it, so Rabbi Shimon says they just simply didn't bring it in Gilgal. Comes out that according to Rabbi Shimon, what if there was an event that created a requirement to bring a par helm davish al tzibur, something along those lines. So according to Rabbi Shimon, the answer is very simply, this time we won't bring it. Maybe according to Rabbi Shimon, it would just simply be an obligation that would hold over until Shiloh was constructed. But in other words, during the time of Gilgal, these karbanos just simply were not brought, even on the central location. Okay, so we just learned the Braisa together. Adkan Divrei HaBraisa. We're on the top of Kuf Yizayin Amud Beis. So there are five opinions registered in the Braisa. Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim, Rabbi Huda, the Chachamim again, and Rabbi Shimon. Certainly we know how Rabbi Shimon departs from everybody else. That part's very clear. In fact, we just went through the Rashi together. It's clear that Rabbi Shimon has even limitations vis-a-vis the centrally located Mishkan in Gilgal. So we certainly know that Rabbi Shimon departs from all the other opinions. However, as we continue now in the Gemara, we have to highlight differences. They're going to be subtle, but differences that exist between the first four opinions, Rabbi Meir versus the Chachamim, etc., etc. So we start today, we're on Kuf Yizayin Amud Beis, and we start My Time with the Rabbi Meir. So what is the basis for the opinion of Rav Meir? Now, if you look back on the Amud Aleph of today, Rav Meir writes, Kol Nidav v'nidav hayikra bebama. Shei nidav v'nidav inkra bebama. So anything which is voluntary is offered on the bama. Anything which is not voluntary cannot be offered on the bama. Again, the word bama, when we use the word bama in of itself, we refer to the bama katana, the backyard bamas or the rooftop bamas. And then mincha nazir is treatment by bama. And according to Rabbi Meir, also a mincha and a karban nazir are allowed to be offered. So what is the basis behind Rabbi Meir? So Amar Krah. So here we go, this week's sedra. Lo sasun kechol asher anachnu osim po hayom. Don't do what we're doing here today. Amar lehem Moshe Lisrael. And here's how we're understanding the psukim in the Torah. Ki ailisu la'eretz. When you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, yashrus takrivu. Ish Asher Yashar Be'inav. The Torah says that a person brings whatever he wants to, meaning voluntary offerings. You're allowed to bring voluntary offerings. Where? Meaning even in your backyards. Chovos lo sakrivu. But you can't bring something which is obligatory. And then Menachos v'Nazirus Yashros Ninhu. Now, as far as the Mincha is concerned, as far as the Karban Nazir is concerned, that files under the category of voluntary. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes, "Kachol Asher Anachnu Osim Po Hayom." Second line down in Rashi. Shanu Ben Tzibra Ben Yachid Makrivim Chatos VeShamus UBechor Umeister Shein Chova Shein Kavu Lehem Zman. What do we offer? Now we offer here in the desert everything, meaning in the desert we offer communal carbons, individual carbons, obligatory carbons, chatos and asham, and bechor and meiser. These are all obligatory carbonos. It just happens to be that they're not calendaric, but they're all obligatory. Kol shekein chovos akavu lemzman, for sure, obligatory carbonos that are tied to the calendar. Avaman asum sham, but when we get there, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, ish kol asher yashar beinav, and Rashi goes on to explain hayachil lo yakriv sham el nedarim unadavos sheyashru beinav. That an individual is allowed to make voluntary offerings which are fit in his eyes. Lindov, lindov, ad masai. And that continues when? Rashi just simply quotes a continuation in this week's Sedra. Ki lo basem ad ata, ela menucha ve'ela nachla. Rashi writes, ad shetavo l'shilo. In other words, there are two destination spots that are alluded to in the Torah. One is menucha and the other one is nachla. Menucha, as we already established, is shilo. Okay, we're going to jump ahead to another Rashi. Rashi chovas lo sakriva. You're not allowed to offer chovas. Hayichidim de ish ksiv velo palig krav ben gedola ben katan de liyachil lo krav ela nidav v'nidav. Hilkach she'ein nidav v'nidav. Rashi says that something which is not voluntary, ein krav bebamas yachid, cannot be offered on a private bama. The ha'ein katshet sibur kravim kidnam bemasnisin karbanas sibur kravim bemishkan karbanas yachid krava bebama. That according to Reb Meir, the communal carbonos are offered on the central location, and the individual carbonos are offered on the bama. And as far as the mincha is concerned, as far as nazir is concerned, so Reb Meir views them as voluntary offerings. So far, so good. V'rabbanan. Now, let's highlight what differences are there. They're subtle. But what differences are there between Reb Meir and the Chachamim? Back to the Gemara, fifth line down. That last word on the line. V'rabbanan ein mincha ubama nizirus chovas ninhu. A mincha and a bamas nizira are ein mincha bebama and there it's two statements. Number one, ein mincha bebama, that there's no mincha that's offered on a bama, and Rashi points out it's based on a drasha, and nizirus chovas ninhu. And how do I view nazir? Nazir is an obligation. This in of itself is an interesting discussion. We've had versions of this discussion before, and that is how to view a nazir. Right, there's a general discussion that the Gemara over here doesn't bring up, but we discuss all the time. Should a person become a nazir? Should a person not become a nazir? So it's a debate amongst the Tanaim. It's a debate amongst the Rishonim. All right, it's a traditional debate whether it's good or not good to be a nazir. But in addition to that, in other words, once you're a nazir, so now you have to count your nazirus, in other words, however long you declared yourself to be a nazir, and at the end you have to bring karbanos. Those karbanos that you bring at the end, do they file under a voluntary karban or obligatory karban? So the answer to that question kind of depends on, well, at this point, once you're a nazir, they're obligatory. But who told you to be a nazir? Meaning it's not an obligation to become a nazir. So you really can look at it in one of two ways. On one hand, once you're a nazir, they're obligatory. On the other hand, nobody told you to become a nazir. So the Tanaim now are basically straddling this question of how to view the karbanos of a nazir. do they fall into the category of an obligation, or do they fall into the category of voluntary? So according to Reb Meir, they fall into the category of voluntary, meaning you didn't have to become a Nazir, you elected to become a Nazir. So these karbanos fall under the category of voluntary, therefore they can be offered in your backyard. Whereas according to the Chachamim, no. Even though you elected to become a Nazir, but now you are obligated to bring these karbanos, and therefore you do not bring them in your backyard, you're going to have to bring them to the central location of Gilgal. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar Shmuel. Now Shmuel says as follows, we know that a Nazir is obligated to bring three karbanos at the conclusion of his Nazirus. So a Shlamim, an Ola, and a Chatas. Right? And again, a lot of discussion in terms of him bringing the Karban Chatas, what sin did he do? Okay, but anyway, he brings three karbanos. Amar Shmuel, Machlokis Bechatas Ve'asham. The Machlokis over here, vis-a-vis our Tanaim that we just introduced ourselves to, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, is only regarding Chatas and Asham. Ava Ba'olos Ve'Shlamim, but as far as the Ola and Shlamim are concerned, Divera Kol Yashos Ninu. Everyone is in agreement that falls under the category of Yasher, Isha Yasher Beinav, and as a result of that, they are going to be able to be offered on the private bamas, the Karve, and they're allowed to be offered on the private bamas. So according to Shmuel, even though we just saw a machlokus between Rameir and the Chachamim, so Shmuel says that the machlokus is only regarding the Chatas portion of the Karban Nazir. But as far as the Olos and Shlamim are concerned, everyone's in agreement that you can offer them in your backyard. So most of Rabbis, the Rabbi says it's really hard to defend such a position. Because we will learn together later in this perek. Chaz v'shok, v'chumos lach metoda. So as far as the portions that go to the Kohen. So Chaz v'shok is a portion that comes off of every carbon Shlamim. Every carbon Shlamim you take the chest and the one of the legs of an animal and give that to the Kohen. Also, the Trumas Lachme Toda, the breads of the Karban Toda, there are 40 loaves of bread in total with every Karban Toda. Four different types. Of each one of the types, one is given to the Kohen, meaning that the Kohen is going to be receiving a total of four loaves of bread. No Hagim Bebama Gadol Veino Hagim Bebama Katana. So they do apply by Bama Gadol, they do not apply by Bama Katana. The Ilu, now, Adkan, that takes us to the end of this Braisa. So the Braisa is now talking about the portions that go to the Kohen. They're coming off of the Bama Gadola, but they're not coming off of a Bama Katana. However, Ilu Zroa Bishela Shire. What is conspicuously absent from this list is the right cooked legged, sorry, let me say that clearer, the cooked leg of the Shlamim of the Nazir. This is what is referred to as the Zroa Bishela. It is not listed over here in this Braisa. Do you know why it's not listed in the Braisa? The Gemara now is going to conjecture. If the whole debate between our Tanaim, Reb Meir, and the Chachamim is only regarding the Ola and the Shlamim, Hamani Rabbanani. So then that means that this opinion now belongs to the opinion, it belongs to the Chachamim. But if you're telling me that their debate is only regarding the Chatzas and the Asham, so then that means that everyone agrees that the Ola and Shlamim are offered in your backyards. And over here, the Braisa is leaving out the Zeruah B'Shela. Why is the Braisa leaving out Zeruah B'Shela? If the debate between Rameir and the Chachamim is not regarding the Olin Shlamim, that means that everyone's in agreement that the Olin Shlamim are off in your backyard. If everyone's in agreement they're off in your backyard, so then there should be a Zeruah B'Shela to talk about. The Braisa doesn't mention Zeruah B'Shela. So, Ela Itmar Hachi Itmar. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to modify our understanding of the debate. Of Shmuel's statement, Amar Shmuel Machlokes Ba'ola V'Shlamim. The whole debate between Rameir and the Chachamim is only regarding the Ola and the Shlamim. Ava B'Chatzas V'Asham Divrei Akol Chovas Ninu V'Lo Karvei. But as far as the Chatzas and the Ashan are concerned, everyone's in agreement that files under obligatory, and therefore they're not going to be offered in your Bama Katana, and everybody's in agreement. There's no disagreement regarding the Chatzas and the Ashan. Okay, so let's quickly recap for today. We started off by describing the historical section of the Mishkan, where we learned this morning that you can eat kachim kalim anywhere in Machane Yisrael, and even while in transit, you're allowed to eat. According to Rashi, you're allowed to take the kachim kalim with you, and then once set up again, you're allowed to eat. You continue eating your kachim kalim. We then go on to discuss Gilgal, the 14 years of Gilgal, and we note now that during Gilgal there was a heter bamos, that one was allowed to bring karbanos in your backyard. And so what we've been discussing now is a braisa that took up the second half of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, which brings the various opinions of what could be offered in your backyard versus what could be offered in the central location of Gilgal. There are five opinions: Rav Meir, the Chachamim, Rav Yehuda, Chachamim again, and Rabbi Shimon. Certainly, we know how Rabbi Shimon departs from the other four Tanayim. So far, what we've accomplished this morning on Kuf Yizan and Amud Beis is we've highlighted the subtle differences that exist between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Whereas, according to Rav Meir, you're allowed to offer voluntary karbanos in your backyard, only olos and shlamim, but you cannot offer anything which is obligatory, whether time-based or not time-based, in your backyard. Those are only going to be brought in the central location of Gilgal. According to the Chachamim, he disagrees with Rav Meir on two points. Number one, a mincha. Mincha is not offered in your backyard. And number two, as far as the nazir is concerned, nazir categorically falls under the category of obligation. And as a result of that, you cannot offer it in your backyard. You have to go to the central location. And then a statement of Shmuel in terms of when and exactly where do the Chacham and Rav Meir disagree regarding the karbanos that is offered by a nazir. Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis.